Welcome to the Prairie Union Society today on Valentine's Day. I was wondering if we should all repeat that traditional verse that we all know. Roses are red, violets are blue, fair and sweet.
So are you.
We have a lot of, I have a lot of announcements. I hope I can get them all, but forget something that we know and then do some more announcements. One of the first ones is that since I got back from California Friday, and the surgery went well, but she developed a leg pain, and she was at the hospital yesterday checking it out. They think it's not the blood clot, but they don't know what it is. But she's home now and tired. I just talked to Elizabeth Alexander, and she said that she has some people checking in on her, and there's plenty of soup. But about midweek, you might want to check with Elizabeth to see if anyone's up for visitors. I also found out that about a month before this week, her surgery came up, which the surgery did go well, but she's in good spirits, I guess, and making plans about publicizing, getting out a brochure and advertising her private practice. The other thing is that the Channing Murray Group is putting on a fundraiser for Cinda, and that will be February 28th, which is a Sunday evening at 7 o'clock at First Society. And I believe, I'm not sure what all will be there, but there will be an announcement in the Prairie Fire, and the suggested donation is $10. Also, if people feel like contributing something to Cinda's medical needs or rent, they're taking contributions through Prairie designated for her, and we'll match it with some emergency monies that we have also. Let's see the next announcement. The service auction, the rumored service auction has a date. And that will be March 21st, which is a Sunday. It'll be after the service, and there will be food here and then the auction. And there will be more about that in the newsletter also. Today is a Prairie Fire deadline. hope to have things to your mailbox by 6 this evening. For anybody who's put things in the mail and hopes that it will be there on a timely basis, I want to remind you that tomorrow is a postal holiday. It's President's Day, so if you're doubtful, please check with Dick to see if he's received your letter. Let's see, I have two other things that I was supposed to know.
Board meeting.
Yes, the board meeting is tomorrow night at 7:30. Any other committee meetings? Sharon,
here. Yeah,
you want to talk a bit about what you've got?
I'm the chairperson of the Social Action Committee, and people have told me that they really like doing some letter writing here because it's something you never get to at home. So I've even done the work of writing up the letters. All you have to do is sign your name. And the letter is for supporting President Clinton lifting the ban and against the ban on gays in the military. So I'll set up a table after this service and before a pop-up. And I hope you all join me on this.
This week we also got a letter from the UUA asking us to communicate to the president and the legislators. My understanding is that the last I heard is that Klug and Fasten, and Feingold were uncertain. So
I got a letter from Klug yesterday saying that he was interested in studying the issue.
So they obviously need more in. Let's see, more announcements.
I have several from the RA, Religious Education Session. Today's first day that we're going to be exchanging secret friends letters. And I have some new adult secret friends because some children came this week that weren't here last week. So I'll let you all know later today you are, in fact, going to be a secret friend. For the kids, usually when I give out the letters, you're downstairs, and so you can read them without the adult seeing, oh, she or he has my letter. But we're going to be up here today, so adults are smart. If they see you reading the letter that they wrote, they're going to know, oh, that's my kid's secret friend. So hide the letter. About intergenerational, the RE committee has some requests. One is that the children start wearing name tags so that the adults can know kids' names. Right? And so that's something that the parents have to help the kids do too. Afterwards, because today is an intergenerational, that means that it's a service that is going to be interesting for both kids and adults, and that means that the kids should stay upstairs. There's no RE going on downstairs. The only thing downstairs is for the very littlest children, the preschoolers and the nursery kids. And so all you older kids, you need to stay up here during today's service. After the service, while the potluck is being set up, the leader is going to lead the kids and anyone else who has been helping get the potluck set up in a singing session. And that will give you something to do so you don't just have to run around. Because we've been talking about how running is really dangerous for younger kids and older people. So while the potluck is being set up, they'll be singing, that especially children, but children of all ages are going in to keep you from getting incredibly bored and hyper.
Adults too.
Adults too.
Everybody is somebody's child.
That's right. Yes. Okay.
All right, more announcements. Susan?
My surgery is going to go until February 26th because I got a cold and came to see my
there will be dancing in the third space on Friday night. You are all welcome. It's New England Town for Dancing with Mac Duff Scaly Band. There is a poster up here.
I just want people to forget about the organizational meeting for the new Union Society, the third one on the east side. And that's this Tuesday night at 7:30 on Atwood Avenue at Mr. Yeager's house. I don't have the address with me, but that is, well, actually, that is law office. So, I just want people to forget.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. More announcements? What is somebody over here?
Enough. All right. Mike?
Yes. Cold hand, warm heart. You know the way it was advertised. Anybody got a cold hand? Oh, got a warm heart? And in the newsletter, and it had been announced, it was suggested that you bring a heart cloth or a heart saying. Anybody said? Anybody got any heart saying?
I wore mine.
You wore yours? Okay, what does it say?
Well, this is a bleeding heart.
Lord Chesterton in 1749 wrote, nine times out of ten, the heart rules the brain.
When Mary Martin was entering the rehearsal hall for The Sound of Music, Oscar Hammerstein II passed her a little verse, which later showed up in the show. A song is no song till you sing it. Oh boy, I forgot.
Bell?
A bell.
A bell is no bell till you ring it. Thank you. A song is no song till you sing it. And love in your heart isn't put there to stay. Love isn't love till you give it away. That's Oscar Hammerstein.
All right.
Mm-hmm. I go to ACOA meetings sometimes on Thursdays. And one thing I like about those meetings is that it's a great resource. They have two tables full of all kinds of information for people. And here's one I got. It's about suggestions from Louise Hay about how to love yourself. One is stop all criticism. Two is don't scare yourself. Three is be gentle and kind and patient. Four is be kind to your mind. Five is praise yourself. Six, support yourself. Seven, be loving to your negative. Eight, take care of your body, and so on and so forth. Anyway, if anyone would like a copy of this, it gives more, it explains expounds on these different aspects of loving yourself. So if anyone would like copies of this, just let me know and I'll make them.
I'll sign.
It's a Malvina Reynolds song that I was just reminded of, and maybe you can all help me sing that little chorus, but love is something, if you give it away, you end up having more.
Love is something, if you give it away, give it away, give it away. Love is something, if you give it away, you end up having more.
It's just life.
Come hold it tight and you won't have any. And it's centered in the land so many. They're all over the floor. Love is something, if you give it away, give it away, give it away. Love is something, if you give it away, you end up having more.
I don't know how appropriate it is, but it does have
a part. Don't worry about that. It's right here.
One of my grandfather's favorite sayings, as I recall, had to do with heart. I have, he said, dropsy and heart trouble. I keep dropping into a chair, and I ain't got the heart to get up.
This is a little verse that I thought of last week. We visited another church, and I was reminded by the minister's sermon of a verse that used to appear in a Baptist church program that I used to mimeograph, and that the minister always, or quite often, mentioned in his sermon. He drew a circle that shut me out, but love and I had the wit to win. We drew a circle that took him in.
I've been fascinated with the concept of angels ever since I was probably 5 and got a little holy card with that gorgeous picture of a guardian angel guiding the children down the forest path. And I think other people have the same interest. I've recently found a guidebook for aspiring angels. The thing that it tells us is that a stranger who looks you in the eye with love is an angel.
Any more hearts?
What's interesting is that heart sayings come from so many different walks of life. You get the literary, like the heart has reason, freeze, and half, well, and then you get Damn Yankees with, you gotta have heart.
What was Saki songs you hear this time of year? A lot of hearts in them. The cheating part?
Any more?
Oh, you got one! Come on in front so everybody can hear it. Oh.
Okay.
From there or here?
We'll sing a chorus and the chorus and the verse and everybody else can sing.
Okay. What shape is it?
It's more in the shape of a pear than any shape. pear with some large stems coming out.
Don't have it sort of like a pear. That way up, which is the big end? The bottom?
The big end is at the bottom.
Yes. Okay, and it's sort of canted one way, is it?
Right, right.
Yeah? It's not actually over here.
It's more right towards your chest. Right,
right
in the middle.
Right
slightly
here.
To the left.
Slightly to the left, somewhere yeah. here. So when all those people put their hands on their hearts and
miss it.
They miss it. It's got a bunch of things coming out of it. Is it just a complex piece of plumbing?
Well, it's basically a large muscle, and it's the most important muscle in our body. And besides the muscle, it's a complex machine in that there's a lot of movement going on continuously because the chambers, they have to pump in perfect rhythm with one another. First the top chamber and then the bottom chamber. And as the blood comes in, the blood has to be able to go out. And so the electrical impulses have to be perfectly synchronized. The valves have to open and close normally, and then the muscle has to have the strength to pump well. And then, of course, the blood going through the heart has to be full of oxygen and all the nutrients that every cell in the body needs to live. So the heart is really at the essence of everything we do.
Now, but Cindy, would you rather have me say you're all muscle rather than you're all muscle? Of Isthmus this week. What's it doing on all those carts down to the Hallmark shop?
Making money.
Why the heart?
It's the American way.
Anybody know?
Lost in the midst of the
I think they just think the heart was it was the main organ. They didn't think about the brain. They thought that the heart gave emotions because it speeded up when you got excited.
That is my suspicion.
And you could hear it, because you can't hear your brain.
It goes back to the old medical theory that we are controlled. Our physical, our psychological makeup is controlled by four humors. And the seat of one of them, the emotions, was right here in the heart. What were the others? I forget.
Bile.
And the...
Phlegm.
Phlegm. Yeah. Very good here, my man. He comes around. How does this all start anyway? How does Valentine get in on this? Tell us a little about Valentine.
He had a massacre.
Was it a he? Was it a she?
There were several Valentines, we think. And they were bishops in the early church in the 200s. And there were various stories about them. In fact, there are as many as 8 different Valentines that may or may not have existed, which tells you that this is kind of all being wrapped up in myth on top of some reality. A couple of them we're pretty sure were martyred by whoever it was the Roman emperor at the time and against Christianity in the 270s. So those stories sort of grew and wrapped up with the pre-Christian Roman Lupercalia, which is when, in fact, the Romans would exchange secret friends, secret missive friends, for a person who would be their partner for the following year. And the early church, by the way, after the martyrs had died, and there was the early church chugging along, got so incensed at this, because this was a pre-Christian, non-Christian belief, and also it was sexual, that what they did was they tried to say, okay, you should pick from the reams of saints, and the name of the saint that you pick is the person whom you should emulate for this year. Well, you can imagine, I mean, that sort of, that went on for a while, but it didn't quite prevail. So this kind of also wrapped into, by the time we got to the 800s to the 1500s, wrapped into the medieval idea, which originated, and you have to recall, in Europe when spring came earlier than here, that on Valentine's Day, which is precisely 2 weeks after the quarter day, which goes back again to pre-Christian, we've got the solstice and the equinox and then the quarter days.
Groundhog Day is right in the middle between the solstice and the equinox.
On that day, birds would mate, you see. They would pick their mate for life. And it was a very widely held belief in all the way through medieval times that this was the day that birds would pick their mate for life, and therefore, naturally and appropriately, humans would pick their mate. So that all sort of wrapped in, and in fact, what was he, the Duc d'Orléans, from who was captured at the Battle of Agincourt, and who was taken as a prisoner to England, wrote a Valentine's Day letter and poem to his lady love, who was in France on the continent. And that's one of the earlier manifestations of what we now call the Valentine's
Day. Here we are today. This is with, by far and away, the biggest week of the year, the one that's just gone by, the florist.
No,
no kidding. This is like for any other retail business. Now, Christmas is the big one. If you don't make it at Christmas, you don't make it. If the florist doesn't make it at Valentine's, that's it.
So I should just add that the games that were played in Lupercalia were played, probably are still played in some parts of the world today, but they were played definitely up through the end of the last century, even in the United States, as well as all over Europe. And in fact, Pepys, everybody's heard of Pepys from the 1600s, who wrote a diary. Pepys records how on Valentine's Day, his wife wanted a particular person who was going to be her Valentine, and the belief then was that if you closed, you see, the first person you saw that day would be your Valentine. So she went through half the morning with her eyes closed until the right person came along. And he also had a Valentine, and I gather from the entries in his diary that in fact it was a young person. It was very similar to our secret friends game that we play here in Prairie. So we're in a good, strong, long tradition with our secret friends.
Valentine's, I think, is a marvelous illustration today of the way the law of supply and demand works. And the supply of roses is pretty much the same. It may go up a little bit. When the demand goes up, the price go up, though. Anybody buy roses? Anybody got roses given to them?
Were you a buyer or a receiver?
Wait a minute. Mike, Norma said she got roses, but you didn't raise your hand, so.
I was horrified by the price.
British children's rhymes collected by the Opies. Postman, postman, at the gate, will you take this to my date? Postman, postman, for a laugh, do the tango up the path. Then I got a couple of roses of red. And this is one of those marvelous examples of folk poetry. Think about this. Roses are red. Violets are blue. The shorter the skirt, the better the view. Roses are red. Cabbages are green. If If my face is funny, yours is a scream. These people went around collecting me. These are children are saying on the streets of England 40 years. What are children saying on the streets of Madison? You got your roses already? Anybody? That's right in the tradition.
I need to tell you, but that was in Riverton, Wyoming, in, I won't say how long ago. That one's been around.
You got a roses? No? Mickey?
Roses are red, some are pink. This rhyme I wrote doesn't really
fit. Is that old or is that really new?
It's me, way back.
Oh, okay.
That's
odd. Another rose. You're a real the source for collectors.
It's kind of similar, but lipstick is red. Lipstick is red. Eyelashes blue. You wear too much makeup.
Okay. Come here. Everybody get that?
No.
No. Just stand on a chair or something. Let's hear it again.
Roses are red, newspapers too. I paid for this ad just for you.
Okay. Yes?
Roses are red, violets are blue. You stink like a monkey and you live in a zoo.
Yeah.
That's a good one. Now we're talking.
Violets are blue, drugs are red,
sugar is
monkey,
clover is
red.
Okay.
Violets are blue,
drugs
are red,
sugar is
monkey,
clover
is red.
Roses
are red, violets are blue. Honey is needed south
here.
Honey is needed.
Yes, one more.
Roses are red, violets are blue.
I'm not sure either. If I speak in the tongues of men and angels, but have not love, I am a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. And if I have prophetic powers and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith, so as to remove mountains, but have not love, I am nothing. If I give away all I have, and if I deliver my body to be burned, but have not love, I gain nothing. Love is patient and kind. Love is not jealous or boastful. It is not arrogant or rude. Love does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice at wrong, but rejoices in the right. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never ends. As for prophecies, they will pass away. As for tongues, they will cease. As for knowledge, it will pass away. For our knowledge is imperfect, and our prophecy is imperfect. But when the perfect comes, the imperfect will pass away. When I was a child, I spoke like a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. When I grew up, I gave up childish ways. But now we see in a mirror, dimly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, then I shall understand fully, even as I have been fully understood. So faith, hope, love abide, these three, but the greatest of these is love. What did Lennon and McCartney say about this, on this subject?
All you need is love.
You got it. A little more than that. Well, a little more. Not much more.
All you need is love. All you need is love.
Love.
All you need is love. Love.
That's
all you need. Love. Then there's
actually,
love.
Mike, I was reading up.
Love. 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 All you need is love. Oh,
magazine that I get about playing keyboard last night, and they were talking about
they happened to be talking about the Beatles in 1964, and they had 11 top 10 hits in 1964, 10 of which dealt specifically with love. I don't know what happened to the last one, but they all were about something about love. So
it's a universal theme, isn't it? The owl and the pussycat went to sleep.
Yes,
it's beautiful. Notice that you
knew it by
heart. Everybody knows it.
Everybody knows it. The owl and the pussycat went to sea in a beautiful pea green boat. They took some honey and plenty of money wrapped up in a 5-pound note. The owl looked up to the stars above and sang to a small guitar. Oh, lovely pussy, oh, pussy, my love. What a beautiful pussy you are, you are, you are. What a beautiful pussy you are. Pussy says, hey, owl, you elegant fowl. How charmingly sweet you sing. Oh, let us be married. Too long we have tarried. But what shall we do for a ring? They sail away for a year and a day to the land where the palm tree grows. And there in a wood, a pee-wee stood with a ring at the end of his nose, his nose, his nose, with a ring at the end of his nose. Dear pig, are you willing to sell for 1 shilling your ring? Said the pig, I will. So they took it away and were married next day by the turkey who lives on the hill. They dined on mince and slices of quince, which they ate with a comfortable spoon. And hand in hand, on the edge of the sand, they danced by the light of the moon, the moon, the moon. They danced by the light of the moon. Edward Lear.
But for the kids, I have to tell you, a runcible spoon is a spoon with a pot you can eat from on each end. So it's a spoon for lovers. One person eats this way and the other person eats that.
Now,
this love poems, of course, are fun to look into, and I think that using St. Valentine's Day as an excuse to go and look a couple up is always fun. So I brought along Christopher Marlowe.
Go ahead.
The patient shepherd and his love. Come live with me and be my love, and we will all the pleasures prove that valleys, groves, hills, and fields, woods, or sleepy mountain yields. And we will sit upon the rocks, seeing the shepherds feed their flocks by shallow rivers, to whose falls melodious birds sing madrigals. And I will make thee beds of roses, and 1,000 fragrant posies, a cap of flowers, and a girdle embroidered all with leaves of myrtle. A gown made of the finest wool, from our pretty lambs we pull. Fair-lined slippers for the cold, with buckles of the purest gold. A belt of straw and ivy buds, with coral clasps and amber studs. And if these pleasures may thee move, come live with me and be my love. The shepherd swains shall dance and sing for thy delight each May morning. If these delights thy mind may move, then live with me and be my love. To which Sir Walter Raleigh replied, I'll read just the last part. Thy belt of straw and ivy buds, thy coral clasps and amber studs, all these in me no means can move to come to thee and be thy love. But could youth last and love still breathe, had joys no date nor age no need, then these delights my mind might move to live with thee and be thy love.
Let's sing number 107. Stand up and stretch. Stuff you see in the newspapers? Is it the candlelight dinners? No? Is it the flowers, the candies?
Well, inseparable from love and many major pieces, it's that pain, love and death,
Yeah. Are we talking about just love between two people today? Is that all there is to it?
Not what the hymn
said. Not what the hymn said, no.
The Catholics talk a lot, at least when I was still trying to be Catholic, they talk about the difference between eros, which is erotic or sexual love, and agape, which is love of persons and just people in general and, you know, living things.
And agape, yeah, which is friendship.
Right.
I was reading a psychology today, and they had, I think it was 7 different kinds of love, and I marked it to read later because but there was eros, there was ludus or ludic love, there was agape, there was manic, there was philia, and there's 2 more which I've forgotten.
What was the other one after manic?
I've forgotten.
Oh.
But it was an article about research that people have done about love, and they've identified these different types. But
what's ludic love?
Play, I
guess.
Huh?
Play. Yeah, playful.
If you could send a Valentine, not to a single person, maybe to a single person, where would you be looking for love today in this world? In this city, in this state, in this country, in the whole world, where do you think we need love? Sorry?
In the government. We need it in the government.
How would it be a different government if there was love?
Who would care about people? The money.
Political decisions would be based on caring rather than profit or greed, perhaps.
So I'm saying the impossible dream. Is this the impossible dream? I don't know. Where could we begin?
I think it's needed at home and in families, especially in situations where kids are going to school and they're not getting the nurturing they need in their home life in order to grow and develop.
I guess I'm very ambivalent. When you talk about loving government, I used to be a government employee, and I can remember feeling so strongly that we weren't trusted. We had to account for ourselves. There were so many checks and balances. And there were so many checks and balances, you lose any sense of creativity. You've got to do what you've got to do, and you've got to be seen to do it. But on the other hand, I'm not so sure that I trust human beings. And so it's very hard to effect the good feelings that one has. It's much easier to take it out of context and say, now I'm going to talk about love. But when you try and put it in context, that is, in context of the fact that we're not all terribly trustworthy, or at least most of us put ourselves in front of other people part of the time, some of the time. It becomes really complicated. It's a matter, I think, of organizing ourselves.
You have this eternal dilemma, I think. It's in any religion. It's with us as well. here we are on Sunday morning, we sing great songs about love. This happens in any church, I think, on any day of the, any Sunday of the year. You say good things about love, we think good thoughts about love, and we hear for an hour and a half. If it's a real church, maybe you're there for a couple of hours, you're down on your knees and up. And what do you do the rest of the week? Ah. What do we do about that? That's what I'm trying to get at, I think. Is there...
However, I say despite the pessimism, you set high standards. You don't set standards for yourself in your community. You're never going to feel like you're going anywhere. Or it makes sense to believe that you're going to pass. It's really important to set standards for yourself.
I think you're right. That's the least we can do here. Even if it's the most we can do here, it's the least we can do here on Sundays. Take it away with us. Beauty.
Well, it gets back to your scripture reading. God forbid that we should quote from scripture here.
I didn't say it was scripture.
Peace starts at home, love starts at home. If I don't go out into the world with an open heart, nobody else will either. And the only person's actions I can change are my own.
Now, this, what everybody's saying right now reminds me of one of the lessons of the 60s and the hippies is that what it really comes down to is your lifestyle. I don't know if people remember that.
I could be yesterday.
Seems to me that, contrary to what the Beatles tell us, what we need is not love, but respect and trust, each for the other.
Well, I mean, if you got one of the seven.
Is that love? Is that part of it, or is it?
Well, we never have established a working definition. Which of the seven kinds are we going to use? So, maybe that is love. But if we each had that for each other, a great many of the problems we experience in everyday living would probably be almost non-existent.
We seem to be very puzzled by what's going on in Europe and Africa and some other places. It would be easy to say if there was love, then these things wouldn't happen, but there's other forces that turn us also. And I was reading last week that somebody said there's a sense of entitlement that they've held on to. To love is an affirmative kind of thing, but it also means letting go of other things that stand in the way and letting go of our sense of entitlement and our sense of needing justice and other things. But there's that part of me that also says it to love somebody may also be to establish boundaries, to set limits.
I think Dick's got a really good point. Trusting and respecting people. How can you love someone you don't trust and respect? And how can you open yourself up to love if you do not open yourself up to either respect or trust other people? There's an old adage that says you cannot love others without loving yourself first. I think you also need to respect and trust
to which I have to respond.
What's inadequate about this definition? Care and concern for others. What more is there to that?
I'm thinking about the children that are here and about taking the ideas of love and applying them in a really hard place of school when there's the kid that is weird and different and really easy to make fun of. How does one love that kid without then being called a nerd and a jerk? Or, if someone is regularly getting picked on, or if there's one kid that is a really tough kid that people are afraid of, how can the children here with us, use the idea of love to just deal with that whole situation, that really real and tangible situation that they're in at school?
No.
think back. You were speaking of the need to trust people. And I was going to say that as an attorney, I do some defense work. And I have learned kind of, I guess painfully, that a number of my clients lie to me. Now, they say they didn't do things that in fact they did. So you can't just go around trusting what everybody says, even though you may have concern for them.
It comes back to what Julie said, I guess, if you have setting limits. How do you deal with a situation? Some of us are still in school. Most of us have been to school. All of us have been to school. There's just one rotten kid in your class who bears down on everybody. How do you handle that sort of a situation? Nobody got any rotten kids in their class? In your class, there is this one kid who messes up on everything. You know, he doesn't work together with the group. He beats on people, or she beats on people. I should be a new sexist about this. You talk to him, let's say that when you talk to the kid,
make you learn stuff, and you're also with friends.
That's a good start.
Well, I was just going to add to that. I overheard Anne say you avoid them. I think that's what happens all too often. The opposite of love is indifference.
Yeah.
And it's not anger, or you don't have an emotional reaction. That's the opposite of love. And I think that's a problem of what I was going back to earlier. That's a problem in Milwaukee, where Howard Fuller wants to put, they're going to take a vote on Tuesday as to putting a lot of money in the schools and the buildings and upgrading the classrooms. And is this really where the problem is? You know, is it going to be better by putting a lot of money into buildings, or is it integral to the family? And what's happening in families and the lack of connectedness and care and, all those kind of things? How do children in a classroom, why do they get this way? Why do they become problem makers and troublemakers? Is it because they're not getting enough attention and love in the family, enough understanding? And yeah. I think maybe that's sometimes where the problem lies.
I guess my thought is that, you know, wherever this happens, if it happens in school, if it happens at your workplace, if you've got Saddam Hussein behaving like there's a bully, the rest of us deal with it as a group. We set limits where we can. And where I begin to lose it, frankly, is hitting the other person back. Which is what we did with Saddam Hussein. And I'm not sure the answer to the bully is that he gets whacked with superior force. If he keeps beating up on the other kids, that he himself gets whacked with a ruler.
Yeah, but you don't set the bully up by giving him an ultimatum where there's no other response but force.
Yeah. The real world. Is all we need love?
Well, I think everybody's been talking about love being concern, trust, respect, care. I think love is something that's transcendent. It's not equal to any of these things or the sum of these things. It's something that happens when these things come on. It's much like talk. You can talk about pathways through the brain and all sorts of electrical and chemical impulses and everything. But these things are a precondition for thought, but they are not thought. And I think love is a sort of thing. It's something that happens, but it transcends all the things we're talking about. It's something that's bigger than, and maybe contains the things we're talking about. But it the things we're talking about are not components of it. It's a transcendent thing. It's a spiritual thing.
As usual, I think where we're going to end up here with questions rather than with answers. Unless you've got the answer, Nancy.
Well, no, but I always believe that if all children in the world be raised with love, they would go into the adult who are loving, and we would cure a lot of trouble. Yeah. On that point, one thing, an article a long time ago about people who were abused by the Second World War stage, people who were poor in health, they found that the people who were most likely to do that were people who were raised in loving situations. The people who were abused were most likely to just let it pass because
it was you know, they let it pass. So that does, you know, just a year. The Scouts used to say that you went out and you did one good deed a day. That wasn't very important. There are worse things to do. We are just about down there, I think. Julie, you want to do some?
One.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, it is not too late. Do come. No, come on.
No.
Yes. Yes, yes. Come on, come on.
You're in it now.
Yeah, you can't get out of it now. Come on.
For a penny in for a pound.
We got to have some music. Then joys and sorrows. Then we're going to clear away the chairs and do a little movement. I hesitate to call it dancing.
This is for the kids, sort of. But it's also about power. It's, in this case, a powerful woman who was mean and ugly.
The course of true love is not always smooth.
There are many ways of losing your heart. And this is a love story of a young woman who nearly lost her heart in a most dreadful way. You probably know the story.
It contains stereotypes that the adults can argue about on some day other than Valentine's Day. But it's also a heartwarming story of good winning over evil. The story begins in the castle of a jealous queen with a heart of stone.
Mirror, mirror on the wall. Who is fairest of them all?
Her lips blood red, her hair like night, her skin like snow, her name Snow White.
Snow White huntsman! Take Princess Snow White into the forest and bring me back her heart in a jeweled box.
Deep in the forest, the good-hearted huntsman fell to his knees before the princess. I cannot kill you, princess, even though it is the queen's command. Run into the forest and hide, but you must never return to the castle.
On his way back to the castle, the huntsman killed a deer and took its heart in the jeweled box to the wicked queen.
Snow White wandered in the forest until she found the home of seven dwarfs. Who were?
Who are they?
Bashful.
Sneaky.
Grumpy.
Happy. I think they got them all.
Okay.
Snow White stole their hearts with her kindness, and they offered her a place to stay. She made the forest her home.
Sure that Snow White had been killed, the queen again looked at herself in the mirror.
Mirror, mirror on the wall, who is fairest of them all?
With the seven dwarfs will spend the night, the fairest in the land, Snow White.
The queen was furious. She dressed herself as a ragged old woman, went into the forest, and tricked Snow White into eating a poison apple.
The apple's magic spell made Snow White fall into a deep sleep. The only way the spell could be broken was by love's first kiss. The queen was certain no lover would find Snow White asleep in the forest.
For many, many nights, the dwarfs kept watch over Snow White, hoping she might awake. Their hearts were sore.
Then, one day, a handsome prince of a nearby kingdom heard travelers tell of the lovely princess asleep in the forest, and he rode there to see her. Her innocence and beauty captured his heart. He knelt beside her and kissed her lips.
At the touch of love's first kiss, Snow White awoke. There, bending over her, was the prince of her dreams. Her heart began to race, and she knew she loved him too.
The sweetheart said goodbye to the seven dwarfs, and mounted on a spirited horse, rode off to a castle of dreams come true.
Car accident last week, which I found out about yesterday, and apparently it was the other person's fault, but she got a hairline fracture of her sternum, which sounds terribly uncomfortable. She's not hospitalized or anything, but she can't breathe real well, and she has to be brought to and from work, so I was a little concerned about that. But I have a real nice joy, which was I was standing around in my office a few days ago in the hallway and ran into Scott Savage, who was formerly very active in Prairie, and he's working for a human resources consulting firm. He was teaching a time management class into my building that day and was on my floor the whole day, and I didn't know he was there. And he and Mary bought a house in Monona, which they just closed on, and Max is going to have a new brother or sister sometime in the next few months. So he said, who knows, maybe he'll come back. So I said, oh, please do.
Barbara, I noticed in the bulletin of First Unitarian Society that Elizabeth Alexander's, one of her compositions, is being performed this morning at First Society. Mm.
Well, Orange is in Bermuda, and this morning we got a knock at our door, and it was a balloon bouquet.
Oh.
The red heart balloons.
Karen? I have a joy. Last Friday night, the Girl Scouts had a father-daughter supper, and several of the girls had, a couple of girls had divorced fathers that came back and were with them, and one of them had a grandfather, but one little girl's father died and had no male person that could come, so she was going to come with Heidi and Richard, but having lost my father at age 6, I felt very strongly that she should have her own date. And so my 18-year-old son, he was okay. I'm very proud of him for that.
Any other joys or sorrows? Carl?
For the first time, the sun is shining.
If you look at open water, you can see the mallards courting.
As I opened the door to get in the car to come to Prairie this morning, there was a glowing, brilliant red spot at the top of the maple tree, singing territory. That's a joy.
Karen?
About 3 or 4 weeks ago, my oldest brother called me, and he and my dad were planning a surprise party for my mother for her 80th birthday. And they wanted me to come and be in one of the surprises. Also had like a wonderful party for her. And it was really just we had a lot of fun.
Oh, that sounds great. Yes. There's a couple more. Marion.
Pussy willows are beginning to come out.
Oh, okay.
Just peeking, little tips.
Mary? Well, something someone said just reminded me of something I saw last Saturday or Sunday, and that was four or six squirrels running all around in my trees and on the electric lines. And of course, two of them made it right in front of me. At the very top of a tree.
Anne?
During the last patch of sunny weather that we had, I tried to bike across Lake Mendota. It was very exciting, very slippery, and a lot of fun. I didn't make it, I had to go back. It was really fun.
I think we need studded tires or something for them. Heidi?
I remember what Judy had said a few weeks ago about the Cardinals singing their territory, and I was walking towards work one morning, and there was this Cardinal singing his lungs out on top of the telephone wires, and I have one that lives in my backyard, so I'm pretty positioned that was the Cardinal. I'm not seeing him, so.
I just saw it, I said it.
He says, you're bigger, you get this territory.
Well, I've got to say, I had found a new friend the last month from this Washington State who tells me about the sunsets.
Yesterday would have been my brother's 42nd birthday. So this was a time, being Valentine's Day, would have been my brother's birthday that I called and talked to my parents and my sister. And things are going pretty well, but it's also a time of grieving again. And I realize, you know, that and amongst all of those things, that's always still a part of what happens to us, the loss of them and the new people that come into our life. I thought about it, and I thought, I am having an anniversary effect. You know, they talk about sometimes when the anniversary of, happy times or sad times come around, you kind of slip back into it. And I remember the day my brother was born, the day before, we went up to Mount Hood. And it was a beautiful day in Mount Hood. And we walked around the lodge, and it was a marvelous time. And he joined our family. Maybe you don't know. He died a year and a half ago of a heart attack at age 40. That's a different kind of love between siblings, I think, that we didn't talk much about, but sometimes you don't know how close it is until they're gone. Any other joys or sorrows? Laura?
I've got a joy. I heard from my brother, which I haven't spoke to in several years, and we've sort of reconnected. He sent me a Christmas card this past year, and I talked to him on the phone this past week, so... That was pretty exciting.
I also talked to my former sister-in-law for the first time in over a year yesterday. And it was a good conversation. I had sort of been avoiding it. Mike?
I got home, I think it was Monday, checked the messages on the machine. There was a message from my daughter Marion in Colorado telling us that she's 2 weeks pregnant.
She had been trying for 2 weeks.
What a well-planned life. You know, some people can have it. They found an amazing life. My sister was working in a school district. She had like a 3-month period where she could have a baby because of course over the summer. And she timed it beautifully and had the baby the 6th of July, so everything worked out well. I know rarely does that happen to you. Any other joys or sorrows? Is there anyone visiting here today who would care to introduce themselves? Like to meet people or anybody here for the first time? We are having a potluck after the service today. You're all welcome to stay. I thought I heard a word. There will be singing at the piano. There will be letter writing. And general jollity. Do we have another song to sing?
We have a dance.
That's right. Movement.
Or if we move the chairs so sort of out to the periphery.
Thank you.
way here.
Take two hands, whatever. And the next verse goes, take my hands in sisterly love. Sisterly love, sisterly love. Take my hands in sisterly love. For love is our communion.
So it goes, take my hands in brotherly love, brotherly love. Move to the next, take my hands in brotherly love. Love is our communion. And then move again, take my hands in sisterly love.
Take my hands in brotherly love, for love is our communion. Take
take my hands and sisterly love, sisterly love, sisterly love. Take my hands and sisterly love, for love is our communion. Take my hands and brotherly love, brotherly love, brotherly love. Take my hands and brotherly love, for love is our communion. Take my hands and sisterly love, sisterly love, sisterly love. Take my hands and sisterly love, for love is our communion. Take my hands and brotherly love, brotherly love, brotherly love. Take my hands and brotherly love, for love is our communion. Take my hands and sisterly love, sisterly love, sisterly love. Take my hands and sisterly love, for love is our communion.